Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
So kinesiology specifically is a study of movement, right? The applied kinesiology is a technique that is used by lots of different healthcare practitioners, but in the United States, it's mostly used by chiropractors. Over in Europe, you'll see podiatrists and medical doctors and just a broad range of healthcare practitioners use applied kinesiology. For some reason here in the United States, it's kind of just stuck with the chiropractors. Mm-hmm. It's not all chiropractors that use it. It's just, you know, if you've been to more than two chiropractors, you know no one's the same.
Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. This is Judy Brewer, and the voice you just heard was Dr. Jonathan Herbert of Northland Applied Kinesiology. He is a chiropractor here in Duluth, Minnesota, actually up in Hermantown, close to Duluth. And as you heard there in the beginning, he talks about kinesiology. He has a lot of tools in his toolbox with that, and he's going to talk about them and how they all work together, which is great. It was really nice to sit down and talk to him. I have met and connected with him multiple times, and I've heard some really great things. His name comes up a lot as a really valued and well-rounded resource. So it was really great to get to know more about that myself and to be able to share it with you all as well. So I think you're going to enjoy and find some great nuggets for yourself as well. We talk about food sensitivities and some of the tests and how all of that works and changes and gut flora and oils and what the best is for cooking and salad dressing and various other ideas and things that we can do that are very practical when we're not feeling our best. Before we dive in, I want to thank you for the opportunity to share great information and great people with you via this episode or other episodes. And this came up the other day, and I just want to mention it. First of all, thank you for sharing the episodes and the podcast via Facebook and forwarding on emails and all that stuff. But do remember that this information, though I am in Duluth, Minnesota, much of this information, and this is one great episode that really speaks to this. This is a Duluth practitioner, and that is great value for those of us here. But the information, he gives us a lot of information that we can apply no matter where we are in the country or the world. And if we're looking for some assistance or a new chiropractor or somebody to help us with a challenge. So I know that might be very obvious to many people, but sometimes we just forget about it, and it came up the other day, so I just wanted to throw that out there. Also, I want to thank you for those of you who support the work that I do on Patreon. If you like the work that I'm doing to try to get more information out to a broader scope of people, not only is the sharing huge, but if you want to be a part of the actual financial support just to help us pay the bills and beyond, that is so appreciated. And thank you so much for all of the people who have jumped on to support. And if you want to do that, as low as $1 a month, that's like less than 25 cents an episode if you look at a whole year. Of course, you are very much welcome to support beyond that, but that is a wonderful starting point and it is really appreciated. You can go to the Wellness Ren Podcast page, which is wellnessrenpodcast.com, and click on the button that says Become a Patron, and you'll go right there. It is a simple and easy process. So you can go through PayPal, or you can do it with, if you don't have a PayPal account. So just wanted to pass that on, because again, that's one of those things that pops up as a question every once in a while, and this is new information to folks. So I know for those of you who listen often and you hear this and you know, thank you for bearing with us to share this information out to those for whom this is a new economy and a new concept of how do we support these independent people doing the work and trying to help support our health and wellness community and those who need it. So thank you. You can sign up for the weekly email list. Super easy as well. Just shoots an email in your box. And if you do sign up and you don't get an email, please do check your spam folder as well, because sometimes they sneak in there. Let's head on in with Dr. Herbert. Enjoy. I think you're going to find some good stuff in here. First of all, welcome and thank you. Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for taking your time. All right. Go ahead and introduce yourself in Northland Applied Kinesiology and talk about Well, let's just start there and then we'll dive into the pieces.
Sure. So I'm Dr. Jonathan Herbert. I am a chiropractor here in, well, my office is in Hermantown. I got into chiropractic because I had a lot of sports injuries, which means I had a lot of different doctors. And I felt that the chiropractor was the one that I always knew I wanted to go into some type of healthcare, but I felt the chiropractor was one that I had the most input in helping myself with. They gave me exercises to go home and do. It made sense to me what they were doing and why they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what got me into chiropractic. In chiropractic school, while we were doing our clinical stuff, I had a patient who was on the spectrum, the autism spectrum. And that really took me more into that area, which led to functional medicine, led to applied kinesiology, and just kind of led me down a whole different path than what I thought I was going to be, which is more of a sports chiropractor.
Okay.
So with that, I kind of sought out the applied kinesiologists, the people doing the functional medicine, and specifically people working with kids on the spectrum. And I ended up in Los Angeles for 3 years working at a clinic out there and kind of soaking in all the great seminars that were coming to Los Angeles. I didn't have to travel for them, right? So that was awesome. So I got a great experience out there working out there. And then my wife and I moved here, and I opened up my own practice here, and have just kind of been bringing everything here that I can to help people out.
Okay. Yeah. Back to Duluth?
No, not at all. I'm from Ohio originally.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my gosh. Yeah. So what brought you to here from Los Angeles?
My wife and I are both from Ohio, and this is closer to Ohio than Los Angeles was. Uh-huh. And she got a job here that was her dream job. And so,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was a good fit. I much prefer this area to Los Angeles. The hustle and bustle of Los Angeles was just too much for me after a while. So
I can imagine that would be fun for a little bit, but really wear off eventually.
Yes. Yeah, it's a great place to visit. It's a lot of fun to go visit. But after 3 years, I was ready to slow down a little bit.
Right. So, wow, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a definitely different atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, so kinesiology, let's just talk about kinesiology a little bit, because it's something that I think some people, you know, if you're familiar with it and you've had experience with it, and I know some people have had just amazing experiences with it, mm-hmm. and some people are just like, I don't even know what that is.
Sure.
So
yeah,
talk about that.
So kinesiology specifically is a study of movement, right? The applied kinesiology is a technique that is used by lots of different healthcare practitioners. But in the United States, it's mostly used by chiropractors. Over in Europe, you'll see podiatrists and medical doctors, and just a broad range of healthcare practitioners use applied kinesiology. For some reason, here in the United States, it's kind of just stuck with the chiropractors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all chiropractors that use it. It's just, you know, if you've been to more than two chiropractors, you know no one's the same, right? They're all different. Everybody kind of does things differently. And even the guy I trained with out in Los Angeles, we did this similar stuff, but we did it differently enough that some patients liked him more, some patients liked me more. So applied kinesiology uses muscle testing. And if you've ever been introduced to muscle testing, typically it's an arm pull-down test where you hold your arm out, you pull it down, and you test different things. Applied kinesiology is a little bit more different, where it gets more specific. Each muscle in the body has a specific organ that it's related to, specific acupuncture meridian it's related to, spinal levels, reflex points. Some have specific cranial bones they're associated with. So it's all these associations in applied kinesiology that kind of help us whittle down, you know, what's the underlying cause to this. So what we do is we find different muscles that aren't working appropriately, right? And we try to identify what is the common cause to these five or four or three, six muscles that aren't working appropriately, and what do we need to do to help that common cause.
Okay. Can you say more about just kind of how that works? So when you're doing, so do you do it with muscle function? Do you do it as well with food and supplements and things like that?
Yeah, the standard applied kinesiology is testing muscles, specific ways to make sure you're testing them correctly, and then assessing what's causing that muscle not to work correctly, right?
Okay.
So if we say, for instance, we're testing the muscle that's associated with the stomach, and that muscle's not working correctly, sometimes we can identify, is it a food that's causing that to not work correctly? Is there a reflex point that needs stimulated? Do you need adjusted? Is it a hiatal hernia? You know, depending on, do you need some acupuncture? So depending on what is causing that muscle not to work correctly, we can kind of assess that, this is the kind of treatment that you might need. You can test for foods. The main way that it's recommended through the ICAK, the governing body, is to actually taste the food and then be tested.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Because then you have the receptors in your mouth that kind of they're stimulated, and your body can say, this works or this doesn't work so much for us. That's one of the ways you can use the applied kinesiology to help with testing for foods. Now, with my functional medicine background, I also do a lot of lab testing. So that kind of helps confirm what we're finding with the muscle test, with the applied kinesiology. So there's lots of different labs you can use for food sensitivities if it's a food concern, or if you think there's SIBO, the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth in the gut, you can do lab testing for that, or H. pylori, or depending on what it is that you end up finding as far as the applied kinesiology is concerned.
Okay, so you kind of have this thing you can go on, and then you can continue to test it.
Sure.
To just confirm your findings.
Absolutely.
Basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I think it's a fascinating tool that, like you say, not everybody uses it. But I know the first time I heard of kinesiology, it was a woman in the Twin Cities who had gone to a chiropractor with a son who had just horrific allergies, and she walked out of there with a solution and her son feeling better shortly after, and she just was like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe this exists and we're not doing this. Like, this isn't the main thing. She's like, the amount of money I have spent and the amount of horrible experiences my child has had to go through to try to figure out what's wrong with them, and to have this be one session to just get things going, she said, was just amazing.
Sure. Yeah, it is really nice, like I said, to help get to that underlying cause. And depending on what that underlying cause is, a lot of times I refer out. I'll refer out to somebody who can do what needs to be done per my license. As a chiropractor, I can only do certain things,
sure,
right? And I'm not licensed to do acupuncture, although I can assess to see if that's what needs to happen. I refer to a lot of acupuncturists around here. I refer to a lot of PTs around here. So, it just depends on what needs to happen. But it's nice to have that tool to help identify it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and so many times that's what we're looking for, a direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I need somebody to help me figure out what is the next step? What do I need to be doing? Awesome tools in your toolbox.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So talk about maybe a little bit more. I know I've heard you talk about food sensitivities,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. So maybe talk about your experience with people with food sensitivities. What are you seeing? What are you seeing help and work, and maybe even how do you work with people to help them move forward?
Sure. So with food sensitivities, the first thing I assess with all patients that come in is the digestive system, right? We want to see if that's working appropriately. That's about 80% of your immune system. Right? If your digestive system isn't working appropriately, you're not getting the nutrients out of your foods, even if you're eating the most organic, healthiest stuff in the world. So that is one of the first things that I do assess with my patients. And a lot of times with food sensitivities, you'll find that there is what's termed a leaky gut, right? Where the junctions between the cells that line the digestive tract are damaged somehow or not meeting together tightly because of some sort of inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what happens is once you have a leaky gut, you start absorbing foods that aren't broken down entirely and they're not useful. And if they're not useful, then the body sees them as an outside invader. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you'll develop sensitivities to these foods that aren't getting digested appropriately. And I've seen a lot of times that if you heal a leaky gut, you can change food sensitivities. But there are also times when it doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends. And that's what I like the lab testing for, is because you can do a pre and post lab test after you do some work on the digestive system and identify what you're more available to eat now versus what you probably should stay away from maybe forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different types of food sensitivities. There's the IgE, which is more of the immediate sensitivity, which you can do the the skin prick test is an IgE kind of reaction. There's IgA and there's IgG. And those are more delayed sensitivities. So if you ate something that you have a delayed reaction to, you could eat it for breakfast but not have a reaction until after dinner or a few days later. And that's more difficult to identify because, you know, you've eaten so much in between there.
Right.
And then there's just specific, they call it secretory IgA, that's a gut sensitivity of the lining, the mucous membrane lining of the gut, that you can just be sensitive to foods that way too. So there's multiple ways you can be sensitive to foods, and you can be sensitive to different foods in different ways, where like you could be sensitive to gluten in the IgE and dairy in the IgG and IgA and something else in the secretory IgA. So it's hard to identify all of them all at once. So it's sometimes the elimination diet is a good way to go. You eliminate the most common food sensitive, the foods that are sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you add them back in, you can kind of see your reactions. And then you know, well, this one we should stay away from. This one we can probably eat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of different routes for the food sensitivities. But I find quite a bit that there's some kind of digestive problem that needs to be identified and treat and healed, helped. And sometimes that will change the food sensitivities.
I imagine if you're, you know, if you have a dairy sensitivity or something, but if you're lactose intolerant, that's not necessarily something that's going to change. You know, you're not going to magically make those enzymes.
Right.
So.
Yeah, lactose intolerance. So lactose is a sugar, right? And a lot of times the food sensitivities are more towards the proteins in the foods.
The casein?
The casein, the whey, yeah, as far as the dairy is concerned. So a lactose intolerance is most likely not going to change. But sometimes the sensitivities to the proteins in the foods will change if you can digest them correctly and absorb them correctly and utilize them correctly. So
okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about leaky gut? This is something that I occasionally hear the conversation come up of saying, how do you really know I have leaky gut? And then how do you actually know it's healed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I like the lab testing.
Okay.
To confirm it. A lot of times you can tell by the symptomology too. Leaky gut is caused by inflammation, right? And it can be inflammation from a poor diet. So just by changing your diet, sometimes that will help. It could be inflammation caused by eating foods that you think are good foods, healthy foods, but they just don't work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, leaky gut, the best way to identify it is through lab testing. And then you go through and depending on what the lab testing finds, you can go through with supplements. Sometimes there's exercises you can do for the different parts of the GI system to get that working better. And then after you've worked through that for a certain period of time, again, depending on how much showed up on the lab test, you can go back and retest and see what's going on. I think I prefer that because it's hard and fast right there. The evidence is right there. And applied kinesiology can kind of lead you down that road too, as far as what's going on there with the supplement testing and things like that. But yeah, leaky gut is a big problem. I see that quite a bit. I think part of it is just how we eat, what we eat. But I think the other part of it is our food is different now than it has been. And it's even different now. If you go to Europe, you can eat different foods over there, including their breads. Whereas if you come here and you have trouble with some of the bread, you know, some people have trouble with bread here and not over there.
Right.
So yeah, there's something going on with foods here that can definitely cause some of the leaky gut symptoms.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's so, I'm always fascinated that I've talked to so many people working with people with food sensitivities. I talked to a woman at an event and she's like, her and her son had gone to France and she said, you know, they cannot eat wheat here. And so she said, oh, we're in France. Let's try something. And she said they had something and they were okay. And then they had a few more things. And I don't think they overindulged, but they enjoyed themselves and took advantage of the good stuff that was there. And so she's like, oh my gosh, we're healed.
Right.
We can do this. And we came back to the U.S. and we got found very quickly that nope, we can't do that here.
Yeah.
It's not an option. So she was just upset in just the whole what is going on with our food here.
Yeah. But I had the same thing. I had a husband and wife couple that went over to Ireland for a couple of weeks and they said, yeah, we could eat anything over there, no problems. And we came back here and within a day we started eating, and they eat, you know, a healthy diet. And they said within a day we started having our, you know, minor digestive problems that it's just part of the American food, I guess.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's certainly adds some challenges in figuring ourselves out. Like, how do we navigate this huge system?
Sure.
It sure makes me want to take a trip to Europe.
Right, yeah. I mean, what better reason do you need, right?
Exactly. Well, I know when I lived in India, my body responded differently. And when I came back, mm-hmm. I instantly noticed some changes there too. So it was sure. like a similar experience, yeah.
Yeah.
Gut flora.
Sure.
That is something we hear about a lot more than we used to.
Yes.
You said something curious at an event we were at, and I want to explore that and anything else you want to share about gut flora as well. But you had said that sauerkraut was one of the better probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit.
Sauerkraut's one of the foods that I recommend probably most often in my office. And I find that it really seems to help with H. pylori. Well, H. pylori is a bacteria that likes to live in the stomach, but it doesn't like a real acidic stomach. And our stomachs are supposed to be acidic to help digest food, break down proteins. So actually what it does is it makes the stomach less acidic. And so then we start having trouble digesting our food. And that just that in itself can lead to a leaky gut. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And with sauerkraut, it seems to help with that H. pylori infection where it might get rid of it. And there's some research that says a small amount of H. pylori in our bodies is actually a good thing, but too much is not, right? It's the whole balance thing that we need. And so sauerkraut, yeah, I love sauerkraut, and I recommend it to lots of patients just for good GI health. And, I mean, what can be bad about sauerkraut? A little bit of cabbage, right? It's always good for the detoxification system, too.
Right. Well, and is there any particular, like, I'm thinking of, you go to the store... And there's some that I don't even remember. I was going to look at my little container because after you said this, I went and bought some
sure.
sauerkraut.
Sure.
But I can't remember what it said because I know there's different ways that some of the sauerkraut and various other probiotics are kind of handled that make them more viable and less viable.
Yeah, I would have suspected that there was a difference, but I have not seen that with patients.
Okay.
I've had patients get the bags of sauerkraut or the cans of sauerkraut from Walmart to other, you know, the co-op or wherever,
okay.
and it has all seemed to work.
That is fascinating.
I know, yeah. So I can't say why that is. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, it doesn't seem to matter what kind of sauerkraut. So what I tell them is to find the one that they'd like to that tastes the best to them, because I have them eat it every meal. And sauerkraut
okay.
at breakfast tends to be a little off.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So just a spoonful or two at every
okay.
meal, and that seems to help digestion pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so cool and simple.
Yeah, very simple. Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's. Where some people might be using some of the yogurts or kefir or kombucha,
mm-hmm.
are all on the kind of same track, but you're seeing
sure.
sauerkraut be the...
Yeah, and another interesting thing about the flora with our gut, so what they're finding now with research is that healthy fats and a diverse rotation of vegetables is actually better than taking probiotics.
Okay.
Because it gives you the diverse vegetables give you a diverse bacterial population,
mm-hmm.
whereas the probiotics are just whatever the bacteria are in that probiotic.
Right, okay.
So with healthy fats and diverse vegetables, you're actually doing yourself a better favor than popping a probiotic every once in a while.
Okay.
So again, vegetables win.
Right. Talk about healthy fats. What is your definition of healthy fats?
Hmm. So I really like the avocado oil right now. We've been using it. Olive oil is good. Use that. Don't cook with that. Use that on your salads or use it cold. Coconut oil has always been good. But I've really been on the avocado oil lately.
Okay.
We started making our own like dips or salad dressings out of it and things like that. There's some good recipes online that you can kind of make your own dressings out of egg and oil and whatever herbs and spices you want to put in there, and then you don't have the sugar that you're getting from all the salad dressings and all that,
mm-hmm.
and that sneaky stuff that they put in there, and the soy oils and all that stuff, so the canola oils. So staying away from those and getting the healthier oils in seems to be a really good help. And then my kids will dip their vegetables in their dip. So they're getting healthy fats in their vegetables nice. There. I kind of sneaked that in on them. They haven't picked up on that yet. So. But yeah, those are the ones where you use. I mean, you've always got your nuts and your grass-fed meats and things like that. And your cold water fish. And the smaller fish are better as far as the oils and stuff. But I've really gotten in more into the using the healthy oils for cooking and making dressings and things. And that's really been a huge change in our family and kind of been passing that on to patients.
And the avocado oil tastes fine.
Yeah, I personally don't like the olive oil. It's mm-hmm. got like a stronger taste to mm-hmm. it. And I feel like the avocado oil is really milder mm-hmm. and I prefer that. And then I can add my spices to it or my herbs and whatever and make it the way I like it. So yeah.
Is that okay for high heat cooking?
Yes. Okay. Avocado oil. Yeah. That's okay. The other reason we like it is right. because okay. yeah. The coconut oil is I think better than olive oil, but they all kind of have a lower smoke point than avocado yeah. oil. So,
okay. Yeah. Just curious if you have an opinion on this. Yeah. I found algae oil at the co-op and I think the brand is Thrive. Okay. I haven't gone and done like research to figure out anything about it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like ridiculously expensive either.
Wow.
Taste is fine. I use a lot of cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
Works great.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I am not familiar with it at all, but a lot of what they're doing with algae now is really nice because it has a lot of the omegas without the toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I would be interested to look into that a little bit more because I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I saw it at the co-op and I was like, ooh, this is intriguing. And right. I was like, okay, what's this going to be like? But I've really enjoyed it. Check it out a little bit more. But it's like, if it's a good product, it seems to make nice sense.
Definitely.
So, and the taste is just fine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to try that
good
out.
Stuff. Yeah. Lectins.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is something that it was a big thing for a little bit, and now it's kind of dropped off a little more.
Sure.
I'm not hearing so much about it, but I recently talked to somebody who is dealing with a massive sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that at all?
Sure. So, it's similar to the food sensitivities where lectins are proteins that bind to carbohydrates. So, you have this mass or it's the combination of the protein and the carbohydrate, which makes them indigestible, right? And so now you've got this undigestible thing in your digestive system and your body sees it again as a foreign invader and you start to make antibodies and to the foods. Dr. Gundry wrote a book on it about, changing your lifestyle. I believe he was a cardiologist and avoiding lectins. If you look through the foods that contain lectins, there's a lot of foods that contain lectins, a lot of healthy foods, right? So-called healthy foods that contain lectins. And so the way I do that is I kind of use the applied kinesiology to test and see if there's a sensitivity to lectins. And there's a lot of products out there that will help you decrease your lectin load, kind of detoxify the lectins.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Gundry has a product like that seems to work pretty well. I've got a product like that I carry that seems to work pretty well, and I'm sure there's more out there. The best thing to do if you think you're sensitive to lectins is, number one, just look at your digestive system again. Go back and treat it as a food sensitivity. At least this is what I've found. Look at the digestive system. Make sure that's as healthy as can be, right? Avoid those foods for a certain amount of time and, supplement with the things that'll help you decrease your lectin load, kind of eliminate the lectins from your body. And then I find a lot of times people can go back to the lectins and not have a problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I do have some patients who just cannot, like I said, similar to the food sensitivities, there are some foods that maybe you just can't eat. And I do have some patients who just cannot eat foods with lectins in them, especially the ones with high amounts of lectins in them. But for the most part, if I find lectins with patients and we clean up their digestive system and you clean up their detoxification system, they can come back and eat at least a little bit of lectins, if not back to a more of a normal diet.
Okay. Yeah. So that's interesting. So it's interesting when our body can like, okay, I need a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're good again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always amazed by the body. I've been working in this for 10 or more years now. It's always interesting. Like, there's only so many processes in a body, right? There's only so many organs. The organs do certain things. And even though something new might pop up in the news that, this is the next big thing, there's always a similar cycle or a similar body system that's not working correctly. And if you get that working correctly, then this new big thing in the news is not a problem. So there's only so much that can go wrong in the body. And if you can figure it out, then whatever the big new thing in the news is tends to be okay.
I think of all of the different diets that are out there, right? I mean, we've got keto, which is a big thing in its various forms, you know, and of course vegetarianism. And then I do work with diabetes. So I'm, you know, the doctors who are like, well, high carb diets are the thing. And then the other ones are like, no carb diets are the thing. And it's so confusing, right? For people as they're trying to figure it out and figure out how do they fit into that? Because I think there's probably, those are all probably healthy diets, right? It's sure. just which one do you fit into? Which one does your body like? Which one can you manage?
Yeah.
What is your experience with keto and people doing keto and you know, maybe even some of these other diets?
Yeah. I've had a lot of patients get on, not from my recommendations, but just because they wanted to try the keto diet, and they've had really good experiences with it. I think what I typically tell people is find a diet that's not hard for you to follow. Because if it's hard for you to follow, you're going to fail, right? It's not going to work. Find a diet that makes sense to you and see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, then you need to try to find another diet, right? So if you're a diabetic and you try the high-carb diet and it makes it worse, that's not going to work for you, right? Let's try to find another diet. I don't think there's one diet that fits everybody. I do think that the more vegetables you eat, the better off you're going to be. But just about any of those diets is going to include vegetables,
right?
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a broad answer. Mm-hmm. Nothing's really specific there, but
sure.
we're all kind of diverse in our own ways.
Right.
And there's a, you know, eating for your blood type kind of thing. Some people really love that. Other people tried it and it didn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody's so diverse enough that you just have to find the diet that works for you and works for your body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a trial and error kind of thing for a while.
Right. Yeah, it seems that the consistent thing across the board is more vegetables is always a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think you'll find a diet that doesn't have more vegetables in it.
No.
Help you out. So, yeah.
And I know with keto, sometimes the concern people have is that they feel like it's cut out some of the more high-carb vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and some people will do keto for a period of time and then they kind of go back into the normal eating patterns, adding those vegetables in and things like that too.
Sure.
So that's always interesting.
Yeah.
So, and this is kind of a putting you on the spot question. If you had like one or two pieces of advice to give somebody who they just don't quite know what their next step is, they want to try something, but they're just not sure where to go. Maybe they're just not feeling great. What are a couple things that you might suggest, whether it's a diet shift or a supplement type thing or just a next step in trying to figure themselves out, which I know that's a really broad question. But
yeah, no, but I think it's a good question because there are so many people who either just aren't feeling top shape or, you know, or have tried a lot of things and just nothing has really worked for them. I think my best recommendation is get a good panel, a blood work panel done. And by a good blood work panel, I don't mean like three or four things. I mean like, you know, you're getting a CBC with a differential, a comprehensive metabolic panel, probably a thyroid panel because there's so many thyroid problems here in the United States. Definitely up here, you need to get your vitamin D checked. I've had people come in single digits with their vitamin D and you should be at 50 to 80 and you're in your single digits. And sometimes that's a massive improvement, right? And so yeah, there's a good blood panel. Even if you don't know how to read it, you can find a functional medicine doc or an applied kinesiologist that will read it differently than a conventional medicine doctor would, right? I feel like every healthcare provider has a good place in healthcare. And if you're just not feeling great, probably you want to look more at a functional medicine doc or an applied kinesiologist who can kind of help you get function working better. Whereas conventional medicine is really great at it if you're having some severe health problems, that's where you need to go for help, right? So a blood panel will help you figure that out. They will identify any problems that are severe as soon as you get your blood work done. And then if there's no severe problems, if you're within their ranges, then take it to somebody else who has maybe tighter ranges, a functional medicine doctor, an applied kinesiologist, and see what they find for you. After that, I would say most people don't drink enough water. And if they do drink water, they're chugging it and it's going right through them, right? So slow down on the water intake, but drink it, drink more throughout the day. Just take a sip, swish it around, swallow it, and drink more throughout the day. And I think between the blood work, just kind of identifying what's going on there and drinking some more water, that might help a lot of people. And then my third would be sauerkraut if I had to do a third.
Right, I am all down with thirds. Yeah. Well, chewing our food sometimes, I know. I think, was it you that
That's
mentioned
true,
that at something? I know that comes up occasionally of that we just don't chew our foods as well as we should.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah, sometimes we're just so hungry when we sit down, it just kind of goes right in. But yeah, kind of enjoy it. Sit back, enjoy it, chew it up. Because that actually will help your digestive system. You've got receptors in your mouth that kind of give the heads up to the rest of the digestive system, what's coming down. You'll digest your food better. You'll get more out of it. Then you're getting your nutrients and it runs your systems better. So slowing down, which is hard to do, you know, slowing down in general, slow down your water drinking, slow down your eating, and kind of enjoy it as much as you can. And so a lot of times that'll help.
Right. Oh, and one of the things, and you could tell me if this is a good suggestion or not, because I'm thinking of, like you're saying, if getting your blood panels read or whatever the case might be, and if you're somebody who has had a bunch of that stuff done and you're going to a functional medicine doctor to bring all of those with you, because like you say, the functional medicine person reads them very different and not only has tighter levels, but also can see different things and patterns within them that bring whole different things to light.
Sure.
That it seems like the allopathic doctors are not necessarily, I don't know if they're not trained to do or whatever the case might be, but that's just my experience.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I always take my stuff and bring it to somebody else and amazing things can happen.
Absolutely.
If you do that.
Yeah.
And another set of eyes, in general, another set of eyes. But
yeah.
A functional medicine person who just has a little different training and perspective is amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another opinion is never a bad thing. And yeah, a different perspective is always a good thing. And I think that the allopathic doctors don't really have a lot of time. They don't have the time, you know.
Right.
They are rushed, whereas in private practice, you can set it up where you have more time to work with the patient. And I think a lot of that problem is kind of run by insurance, where you have to speed things through in an allopathic healthcare model, where in private practice, you don't really have to do that so much. So
right, you're in much more in control.
Right.
And working with your people, yeah, which is so fantastic. Thank goodness. Any other thoughts you would like to pass along?
I guess I would say if you're not feeling well and you don't know where to go or what to do, start asking around, because you're not the only one who doesn't feel well. There's a lot of people here in the United States who don't feel either 100%, you know, maybe they don't feel 90%. They feel good enough to get by and good enough to function, but they would love to feel better. And someone around you has found another healthcare provider who has been able to help them. If you can find that other healthcare provider, give them a shot. You know, call them up, talk to them on the phone. A lot of times people in private practice will, like I said, have the time to talk to you on the phone, explain what they do, explain how they might be able to help you. Sometimes they'll ask you to send their blood work in. They'll look it over. If they think they can help you, then they'll call you back and tell you what they see. But just ask around. If you're feeling like you're not as good as you can be, ask around. See who other friends or people who have tried and recommend.
Yeah, that's definitely great advice. I know I just had a situation myself that I wish that I would have asked more people before I sort of went with the recommendation to go to, you know, from one clinic to another. I wish I would have asked more questions to other people of what's your experience?
Sure.
Who do you recommend? Who have you gone to? Because then you get a sense sometimes of who they are, you know, from the person's response. How do they work with their patients, and are they on maybe a similar belief system as you are,
yes,
you know, too, which can be really helpful.
Yes.
And save you time and money too. And it's hard to get into some of the medical people, so
it is. It's definitely
the sooner you can find the right person, the better.
Yes.
So share with us, first of all, how to find you, but just what does it generally look like to work with you? If somebody were to set an appointment with us, what's that going to look like?
Sure. So my initial visit is about 2 hours long. And we sit down and we'll talk for about half an hour, 45 minutes about your history, what's bothering you, what's going on, and what you've done in the past to help yourself. You know, what has worked, what hasn't worked, all that fun stuff. And we go through, we talk about sleep, diet, bowel movements, which is always exciting for people to talk about. We talk about exercise and past traumas and things like that. And then we get into the exam, which takes another 15 or 20 minutes, where a lot of it is a neurological exam. I want to try to pick apart your brain and see, you know, what parts of your brain are working really well, what parts need a little bit of support, that kind of stuff, because the nervous system runs the whole body, right? The digestive system gives us the fuel, the nervous system runs the whole body. So after the exam, then we get into the applied kinesiology part of it. And that usually takes a little bit longer because I kind of interweave the applied kinesiology and chiropractic care and kind of put them together as I'm working. And that's part of the nutritional aspect too. So you're getting kind of three things all at once right there. And that usually takes a good part of, you know, another hour, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how much I can do with you, how robust your nervous system is, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a good 2-hour appointment for the most part for most people who come in that first visit. And by the time we're done, we have a good idea on any exercises we need to do at home for brain health, digestive health, any supplementation that I might recommend. And usually I'll see people maybe the next week, but typically it's about 2 weeks or so. Okay. Because it gives them time to get those exercises into their lifestyle and change things and, you know, do all that. And then I'll see them, you know, every 2 weeks or so often until we start seeing changes. And then I try to push people out as far as I can. You know, I want to find that I don't want to say breaking point, but that happy medium where when they come in, they don't need a lot of work done, but they do need work done. So they're getting their money's worth of the office visit, but they're also not miserable, you know, when they're coming in and they need to start, you know, back to, well, I need to come in every 2 weeks again. So I try to get them out, you know, my goal is, you know, 3-6 months. That would be great. I think if everybody just saw somebody every 3 or 6 months, that would be awesome. But sometimes that doesn't work depending on how they treat their bodies and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But follow-up visits are, we schedule them for an hour. And some people take the whole hour, some people take 15 minutes. It just depends on what needs to, you know, what needs to happen as far as the supplementation and the applied kinesiology and the chiropractic care. So, yeah, I mean, I have it set up so that they get their time. I get to spend the time with them that I feel like I need. And fairly easy to find me, I think. I got a website. But if you just Google applied kinesiology in Duluth, you'll find me. Dr. Herbert, any of that stuff will pop up. But phone number is 218-727-3343. Yeah, I'll talk to you on the phone too.
Awesome. That's also very nice too.
Yeah.
And sometimes not something we get the opportunity
right to
do. Wonderful. Well, this has been really great. It's great to learn more of what you do and how you work with people. Just because I've seen you around for a long time.
Sure.
And weirdly enough, I send people to you.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
I need to come see you myself to experience, because I love the way you're working with people.
Yeah. I do think Duluth has a really nice referral network where through private practitioners specifically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just like all the different... I mean, a lot of us are friends and know each other too, so that helps out. But
right.
I just like all the different modalities or kind of providers that... You know, there's lots of stuff that I don't do and lots of stuff I don't want to do, right? And I will send people off and know that they're going to get good care in different areas. So,
right. Yeah,
I really do enjoy that.
Helping people figure out what is the thing that they need.
Right.
Which is also really nice, too. It's nice to have a resource for that because we don't always feel that way. We don't feel that way so much with allopathic medicine. You don't always feel that they suggest other options. This kind of feels very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And then even sometimes in, you know, practitioners, but to have people who really are about, this is the thing, this is what I do, but I can't do this, but you need this. So let's help you get that
right figured
out. It's great. So very cool.
Right.
Well, thank you. Thanks
Absolutely.
For your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
For sure. Just to share that contact information with you again, his phone number is 218-727-3343, and the website is Northland ak.com. And there's a lot of really great resources on there as well. So check that out. I wanted to pass on to Dr. Herbert, and I had a little bit of a conversation after we quit recording about how he works specifically with people and what his adjustments are like. And he says that they tend to be more gentle, that he certainly considers what the person needs, and that's what he goes on. But he says he tends to find that the adjustments are more on the gentle side. We really do have a great group of people in Duluth that are in health and wellness and the integrative and holistic practitioners that know each other or know about each other and are so willing in so many cases to share and suggest people that have modalities that might be helpful. And we, the patients and the clients and the practice members, we really, really do appreciate that. That is certainly how I have found many other people and learned about modalities that I didn't know existed. One of my first experiences was going to an osteopath in the Twin Cities who worked on me a couple times and said, you know what? I don't think I'm the best fit for you. I think you should go try Rolfing and check this person out. And I checked that person out and she sent me to somebody else who she thought could help me better and kind of down the line. So again, so it is a wonderful thing to have people recognize maybe what's in our best interest or what's going to help us the most and really hear us. And I think that that's sometimes what that really shows too, is that they're really listening to us, hearing us and knowing themselves as well. So yay. Thank you people so much. It's a great gift that the community provides. And I wonder for myself, if that doctor hadn't sent me forward, if I would have ever learned about some of the modalities that keep me upright and walking every day. So thank you, Dr. Ruby in Minneapolis, for sending me forward. He does magnificent work. I still continue to hear about him today, but he didn't think I was the right fit, and that's okay. Thank you, Dr. Herbert, for the information that you shared. Some great tools that we can implement and ideas that are really not too hard. So go sauerkraut and other stuff. Anyway, thank you so very much for listening. I'm super excited about next week. I had the amazing opportunity to have a conversation with Emily Nagoski. She is a brilliant sex educator and author of the books Come As You Are and Burnout, and she has 3 or so TED Talks that are fantastic. So go watch the TED Talks, but definitely come back next week and listen to our episode. And until then, may you find pieces that fit effortlessly into your health and wellness puzzle. See you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.